Welcome to the But Here We Go podcast, coming at you from But Here We Go Studios in Dallas, Texas.
Not what I was going for, but sure.
We have missed, what, 1 week?
Two.
2 weeks?
I mean, like, this is like 2 weeks out, yeah.
Oh, man, 2 weeks out.
Well, maybe and we already missed one. I don't know.
To our faithful followers.
Including two who are apparently in the country of Mexico.
We are back. Here we are. We're back. Please have a listen. We're going to have a great show for you today.
I'd just like to interject here that I have discovered since I edit these that I sound very... And I think it's just because I'm trying not to be super loud because our son is asleep. But I sound very, like, subdued and, like, either tired or depressed. And I promise I am not. I am just not my normal peppy self.
You're
because
not
of the sleeping four-year-old.
Not
too depressed. Far from where we're doing this.
Everything is A-okay.
Well, I listen to it and I'm like, why do I sound like that?
Yeah.
That's not how I normally
Maybe you
sound.
Just have to turn your speed up just ever so slightly so that way you have a slightly higher voice and you're like a little bit more bouncy.
I can't turn my speed up and not your speed.
Well,
so you'll have to be bouncy too. Yes, I have. The audio okay. Wouldn't sync.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. You just have to add in a lot of
that'd be an editing nightmare.
It would be.
Anyway,
happy Easter. Today is Easter Sunday, when we're recording this.
It's true.
Easter Sunday. This is maybe our first ever Easter episode, except we're not going to talk about Easter.
Things. Easter.
Now, we're not actually going to talk about Easter unless I don't actually know, because you're preparing most of the show. But I wanted to say... And I think I said this last year around this time. I swear, and I say this every year, I swear that April is the busiest month of the year.
You keep saying that.
I always say that. And I know my birthday is in April, so maybe that is part of it. But I have thought since high school that April was the busiest month of the year.
I think it's because your birthday is in April.
I think it may be. I think it may just be my birthday.
Also, you need to pay the taxes.
True. You hear that, everybody? If you have my phone number, make sure you text me on
Thursday.
All you
have to do is click send.
Text me on Thursday. Make sure I've paid the taxes. But I did a quick search because I was like, you know what? I'm sure that April is the busiest month of the year. I think everybody else is wrong. That being...
What do you mean everyone else is wrong?
That being anybody who tells me that I'm wrong.
So me.
So you. But according to Boostly, I don't know what Boostly is, but it's a survey website. They say that the busiest month of the year is... What do you think? Take a guess.
December.
No, it is January.
Okay, I was close.
I mean, kind of, because January, I get it for business. January is the beginning of the year.
Right.
December is usually very slow for
it's,
work.
Right. It's more of like Christmas holidays and stuff.
Yeah. So
it depends on like who you're asking.
Yeah. Commercial world or like retail, super busy.
And that's just in America. Different countries may have different businesses.
Yeah. Who knows what's happening in other countries. That's something we talked about the other day, how all of our news is all U.S. news.
Right.
Well, like, come on, I want to hear about other countries.
I think our poor little brains would explode if we knew too much about everything going on. But you're working with people who are celebrating Ramadan right now. They, like, shut down for, like, a month.
Yeah.
Is Ramadan really a month long?
It is a month long.
Is it 40 days?
I don't know if it's 40 days. I think it's a month.
Okay.
I think it started Yeah, it would have been...
It's a long time. I guess
March
like essential workers are working.
Through April 22nd. Well, so here's what it is. And you probably know this.
I don't.
But for the audience, just in case they don't know, you can't eat or drink from sun up till sundown. And then you
binge.
Can. Well, you don't you're not supposed to binge. You're supposed to...
So it's a month. Does everyone lose like a fudge ton of weight?
I don't know how much weight they lose.
It's dangerous.
But basically you... That is a time where you're fasting so that you can grow closer to...
Right. It's their version of Lent.
And then they have... The way that it was explained to me, you would typically have like one big meal at the end of the day. And that's also usually associated with some type of worship. And then I didn't ask about like, do you wake up extra early so that you can eat a breakfast too? But I don't.
Right. And I would imagine that probably doesn't happen. So when does their sunrise and when does their sunset?
I don't know. I mean, it depends on where you're at. But they did say, because I asked some people while I was at one of these things that I was at recently, and they said for work, and they were working in the Middle East for the past few years during Ramadan, and they would only have work days that were, I think they said you could either go in from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m., or you could go in from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. So you have...
During Ramadan.
So you don't get like the... You don't just... Everything just stops.
Right. But if you owned a restaurant, it does.
Yeah. Well, you just have to shift your hours and have a very, very busy like 3 hours at night.
That's a good point.
So...
Interesting.
Yeah. So you have shortened work days and, of course, no work snacks. I bet the companies are super happy about that month where they don't have all those snack bills.
I'm not sure that the companies over in Middle Eastern companies or Middle Eastern countries are doing the same things as millennial American companies.
Maybe.
But it'd be a cool study.
Nobody knows.
Hey, are you ready to dive into my articles?
Well, I want to know from the rest of our fans out there, what month they think is the busiest. So feel free to text, feel free to leave a comment, leave a review telling us what month you think is the busiest, whether it's personally your busiest month or whether it's like your job and its busiest month or just, you know, a month that you think sounds like a busy month. Like July.
Send it to Joe.
So busy.
Just don't say April.
Please do say
this
April.
This is a Joe phenomenon.
If you think April is busy, hit me up. We can commiserate together.
Gosh.
All right. Okay. What do you have planned for today?
A Harvard trained psychologist shows that if you use any of the following 9 phrases every day in your relationship, it will be more successful than most.
Is I love you one of them?
Yes.
Wow. This guy is a genius.
I was like, this would be funny to talk about.
Thank you. Now, is thank you one of them?
Can I read you the list? Or do you just want to guess the 9? Or do you want me to read you the 9?
I think I love you.
It is I love you.
And hello, dear. How are you?
Thank you is not on here.
I can't believe him. He's fake. Fake news.
He's Harvard.
Oh.
Okay, so
let's hear the list.
The first one. Is say, and this, keep in mind, according to the headline, let me kind of read the blurb and we'll get us into it. As a Harvard trained psychologist, I found that happiest couples don't avoid conflict. They navigate it by speaking to each other with appreciation and respect. Unfortunately, I've seen a lot of marriages end due to poor communication and an unwillingness to change. So if you use any of the phrases with your partner, your relationship is more successful than most others. So it's not really saying much.
It's not saying those things. It is the fact that you say those things means you probably have a better...
Yeah.
Okay.
Number one, I appreciate your effort.
It would just upset me.
Or similar phrases, I appreciate that you work so hard to support our family. Or I'm grateful that you take the kids to school because it helps me to get things done in the morning.
Okay. Deal.
As the homemaker, I would say, yes, this is a great phrase to hear.
Okay. Hey, I appreciate your effort.
Oh, thanks, babe. Thanks so much for that. Number two, it's going to be a Joe Batir eye rule. Are you ready?
Okay, let's hear it.
I like you.
I like you.
Okay, it was a nose scrunch, but not
I love you.
I love you is a different one. This is different.
Okay.
Because I think, because have you ever heard the phrase like, I love you, but I don't like you?
Yeah, I've heard that.
Sometimes people just want to make sure that you actually like them too, right? That's what he, oh, similar is, I like that you are so passionate about staying healthy. Or I like how divided, sorry, I like how devoted you are to your hobbies.
I like how divided you.
I love how confrontational you are.
I like how divided you make those stands when you're coaching basketball.
Number three, help me better understand this. Or similar phrases, I don't know why this is so upsetting to you. Please help me see your perspective. Or I want to work through this together and I need to understand you better to do that. Which is hilarious to me because this is like the number one thing they taught us in premarital counseling is to, like, in a conflict resolution.
Seek to understand.
Yeah, seek to understand and then always be like, yeah, basically like, hey, like, can you help me understand this? If you're like having trouble hearing something from somebody's perspective or seeing someone, it's that. And then not using, is it you statements?
Yeah.
But using I statements.
I statements.
Right. That just seems like basic conflict skills.
I feel like you are terrible. That's a bad example.
Terrible example. Number four, I'm listening. Which to me, I think is funny because I only say I'm listening like to you if you think I'm not listening. So it's not typically a good conversation.
I agree. I think when you say I'm listening, typically it is a like side comment, right. Like, hey, I'm listening. Are you going to keep talking? Or like,
right.
Oh no, don't worry. I heard you.
Right. Or like, I think where I use that phrase a lot too is like with my mom friends, like if we're like at a park play date, I'm like having a conversation with a mom, but I'm also like parenting Jake or like doing something with Jake. And so I'll have to be like, hey, I'm listening, like keep talking. But really, like, unfortunately, my attention is 100% divided, but I'm listening. I just don't know how much I'm going to be able to really follow your train of thought. But here are some similar phrases. I'll stop talking now and really try to listen to your point of view.
That's funny.
Or I want to hear your side of things, even if we ultimately disagree. If you just started out a sentence that said, I want to hear your side of things with the disclaimer, even if we ultimately disagree, that just makes me feel like you automatically think we're going to disagree no matter what.
I'm going to start with that. I'm going to walk in and be like, listen, I know we're not going to land on the same page here, but let's have this conversation.
Yeah, let me hear how stupid your thought process is, and then we'll agree to disagree at the end.
Listen, I need a little bit more fodder for our argument later. Let's have a conversation about this thing that we fundamentally disagree on.
Oh my gosh. Number five, I'm sorry. Or similar phrases. I didn't communicate my feelings in a respectful way to you, and I'm sorry for that. Or, I didn't like the way you acted last night, but I also need to apologize for lashing out.
Agreed.
Yeah, basic conflict resolution skills.
I forgive you for lashing out last night.
Oh my gosh, that's number six. I forgive you. Can you forgive me?
I forgive you.
Can you forgive me?
I forgive you. Can you forgive me?
No. No, I can't for sure. Similar phrases. I know we can't change the past, so I'm actively trying to let it go and move forward. Or, I made a mistake, and I'm trying to forgive myself. I hope you can forgive me, too.
Ooh, I like that one.
I kind of like that one, too.
I like that one. Listen, I can't forgive myself, but can you forgive me? I'll never let this go, but I hope that you will.
It's kind of like I could see how you could say that, though, and be really manipulative as well.
It sounds borderline.
Like, you're making me suffer. With your, like, you may be the hurt one in this situation, but now you're making me suffer because I'll never be able to forgive myself.
It's kind of like gaslighting.
It can be. I mean, I feel like every healthy thing can be turned into gaslighting if used in a manipulative way.
You could turn anything into a gaslight.
Anyway, number seven. There's only three left, but one is I love you. Do you want to take a stab at the other two or any ideas?
What do you want to do today?
Close. Let's have some fun.
Let's have some fun.
Or similar phrases. We should get some fresh air. Want to do something fun today? or I know I'm a lot sometimes. Let's take a breather from the tough topics and watch a comedy.
Wow, I've never heard that phrase. Hey, listen.
I know I'm a lot.
Listen, I'm having a day. Let's just turn on a rom-com and chill.
That was funny.
Did they put in there, hey, do you want to start a podcast?
No. That's number 10, actually. No. Okay, so the last one, other than I love you, is I am committed to you. Mm-hmm. Or similar phrases, even when times are tough, I still choose to be with you. Or I'm here and I want to make this work with you. We're a team. We say that all the time. Yeah,
team Batir.
We don't say I want to make this work with you because that sounds like we have one foot out the door, but we say we're on each other's team.
Yeah, we don't walk in and be like, all right, now listen, this team, we could go to the World Series, but only if we both work at it.
Ooh, sorry, I've got the yawns tonight.
Now,
yes?
Are you listening?
I'm listening.
When it comes to that last one, like, I'm committed to you, I like that. But at the same time, all you are doing is you are trying to remind yourself and your spouse that you made vows and an agreement to stay together.
Right. Keep in mind, this is not necessarily just to people who are married. This could be for like a boyfriend, non-married
couple.
Yeah. So in that situation, I'm sure having that reassurance, especially during a moment of conflict, that, hey, like, I'm committed to you. We're on the same team. I could see that as being very reassuring.
Yeah. True.
True.
Have you ever thought, this is crazy, this is a crazy thought that just came to my mind. You know how some people have prayer rooms that they talk about? I've never had one.
A war room?
A war room, yeah. What if you had a conflict room where you put these 10 phrases all around? Well, maybe not let's have some fun, because that one doesn't fit into conflict. But like the I love you, I'm committed to you, I'm sorry, please forgive me.
Just like to remind yourself, I think.
Just to remind yourself, like, and then your marriage vows and a picture from your marriage. And like having that and like, hey, listen, I know we're about to conflict. We need to go to the conflict room. And that is like a spot where you can be reminded of what you're doing in that relationship. And then you work through it.
Right. I think if you had enough free room in a house, that would be a great room to do that. But you actually made me think of something, because I noticed on my calendar this upcoming Friday.
Is conflict day?
It's confrontation day.
What? Do we have a confrontation day on the calendar?
We have it on my calendar because I actually invented confrontation day my junior year of high school, and I put it in my calendar as a reoccurring event every year on that day, because that was the day that I had like this huge, or no, I think that was just the day that I finally resolved, like, one of my best friend in high school at the time, we had known each other since freshman year, and we got into a stupid fight. Truthfully, it's not even, don't even need to go into the details.
Don't even remember.
No, I remember it. It's just like so dumb. Like, I remember the situation. I don't remember why we were upset. But anyway.
Boys.
It was not boys. Fine. I guess, like, Haley and I had befriended a girl in our grade who was, like, kind of like an outcast. Like, she was, like, I guess she had been a little promiscuous and had been labeled like as such, and so was kind of like avoided by a lot of the other girls. And so Haley and I were always known for, like, you know, we were like the theater nerds, so we were always befriending the outcast, and that's kind of like my thing anyway. I'm always rooting for the underdog. Long story short, Haley and I started hanging out with this girl a lot, and my best friend at the time, I don't remember why she was upset about that. I don't know if she felt replaced or if she didn't like this girl. I don't know, because we all ended up being friends at the end. But it was April 14th that we finally had, like, resolved the conflict. But it had taken far too long, and because I historically and famously so am terrified of conflict. And so instead, the day is for me at junior year in high school, Allie, to remind myself, like, hey, if there's a conflict going on right now in your life that you have not addressed, it is confrontation day. This is a kick in the pants to resolve it today. Don't let it go any farther. So April 14th is confrontation day.
That's good. Right before your taxes are due. That's perfect. That works out well.
It's great. It's great.
Now, I don't want to cause a confrontation here.
Okay.
But I don't think you made that day. I think it existed before you.
What are you talking about? Let me look it up.
Look it up.
Confrontation Day.
It was in Friends. It was in Seinfeld.
Wait, was it really? Because I had never seen Seinfeld or Friends until, like, I still have never seen an episode of Seinfeld, but I didn't watch Friends until 3 years ago.
It was in...
Allegedly, there is a conflict resolution day.
When was it invented?
Let's see. History of conflict resolution day. It was established in 2005. Oh, that, it just highlighted promoting awareness of mediation, arbitration, conciliation, and other creative peaceful methods of resolving conflict. That's the motive. So that would have been a year or 2 years before I invented Confrontation Day.
2005 was when I graduated high school.
I know, you're older than me. I entered...
So that would have been...
I graduated in 2008, so my junior year would have been 2006 or 2007, okay, depending on when that happened.
Okay.
Sir.
Okay, fair enough.
Are you listening?
I'm listening.
Okay, anyway, I have a geology article next. Are you ready for it?
Yeah, bring it.
Okay, this is a segment I like to call... Is Joe going to trash this article?
That's a
long name. Oh, and maybe, and then it's combined with Does Joe Know, as Will You Know the Scientist mentioned in this article.
Okay, bring it.
Okay. Is that the title of it? All it says is, the geologists are floored. The Earth's core is wrapped in the floor of an ancient ocean.
Is it talking about perovskite?
What is that?
Is it talking about perovskite?
Let's see. In a new study published in the journal Science, researchers who analyzed extensive seismic imaging data from Antarctica have discovered what they believe is material from the ancient floor of an ocean subsumed by the Earth's interior over untold millions of years to reach where it now resides near the planetary core. The giveaway? A thin and noticeably dense layer wedged in the core mantle boundary some 2,000 miles beneath the surface.
Okay, so they're just doing a whole lot of bad puns, which is the writer, who obviously is not a scientist. But, okay, so he's talking about a remnant slab.
Okay, and what's a remnant? So like a very remnant, basic geological term?
So basically, when you have the ocean floor, oceanic slab, subducting under the continents.
Right.
What happens is eventually those break off.
Right.
And then
gets sucked into
that
the core.
Piece, yeah, that broken piece of the slab usually gets sucked down and re-melted.
Well, yeah, because the Earth is just constantly recycling itself.
Yeah. But you can get a remnant slab, which gets like stuck. For some reason, it doesn't fully melt and it just kind of is hanging out there. Now, obviously, we've never been there, so we don't know for sure. But that is the best understanding of why you would be getting these changes in seismic wave velocities, is that you've got a more solid piece of rock down there, and that ultimately changes the velocities.
Do you want to know what the actual article, the research article, is entitled? Would that make you feel better? And not the
scientists are floored.
Yeah. Globally distributed subducted materials along the Earth's core mantle boundary. Implications for ultra low velocity zones. Does that make more sense to you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so do you know the following scientists?
I may have read that article, actually.
Have you really? I feel so fancy.
Potentially.
I picked an article.
Not the pop science article. Right. This is new.
The real article.
This is a new article.
Okay, do you know Samantha Hansen?
Samantha Hansen. I don't think so. Where's she at?
She's at the University of Alabama, Tuscaloosa.
Nope. Okay, don't know.
Do you know Edward Gennaro? He's at Arizona State. Okay. Do you know Ming Ming Lee?
Wait.
Do you know Ming Ming Lee?
Ming Ming Lee.
This person is also at Arizona State currently.
Probably not then.
Well, they're all from Arizona State.
I mean.
Do you know Sang Hyun Shim?
No.
Sebastian Rost.
No.
Okay. Bummer. No. Oh, he's in the University of Leeds.
Oh, okay.
In the UK. How did the four or five of them get, they're all over the place. You geologists really collaborate.
Yeah, it really depends on who and what. And so it sounds like, for me, that sounds like it could be, so when you're talking about, you're pointing out the fact that all these people from
Alabama, Arizona,
totally different areas. UK. What could be happening is one of those people is a professor who had the rest as students, or at one time,
started
to collaborate with one other random person because of some other background or some reason. So really, like Leeds and Arizona State probably were already collaborating. The Alabama person was probably like Ming Ming's student. Mm. And now they're publishing, but now she's a postdoc at University of Alabama or a professor or something. So that's how you end up with that random third school.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Well, you need to collaborate with more people. Like
I collaborate State. With so many people.
Where's your papers? How come I'm not finding your papers when I Google interesting stuff?
Because now all my work is proprietary.
Oh, okay. It is big shot. Not
allowed to be talked about.
Oh, okay.
The fun story that I can talk about, but I can't really talk about.
Are you sure you want to put it on a podcast?
Yeah, totally. We just did this project, finished it up, sent it out. And we asked, hey, can we present this stuff at a conference? And they're like, yeah, typically we don't ever talk about anything in public. So it's probably going to be a hard no from the lawyers, but I can totally ask. And I was like, okay, cool. Like we can scrub absolutely everything. We can say this is just like an idea that came out of
your butt.
Thin air. Came out of a fart in the wind. And he was like, yeah, that's still probably a no. Like, all right. So, you know, that's how some people are out there in the business world.
That was your fun story.
That was the fun story. It's so fun. I can't even talk about it.
Can you tell me off air?
Yeah, I can.
Okay.
Sorry. But more than likely, because the idea of like scrubbing it down to so mundane and
no one want to listen to it
sanitized,
anyway.
Like, no, it would be totally, it would still be very interesting. But the whole idea, like if you sanitize it so far, it's like, this is not like risking anything. Like this,
they don't want anyone to even have a resemblance of an idea.
But the thing is, like, the idea is already in our head. So now if you take it one step further, now it is an original idea, which means there are infinitely more possibilities on how we can present it as opposed to having these people tied to it at all. They're missing out on free publicity. But you know,
tell them, Joe. You tell those lawyers.
What I tell people all the time when I reach out to them
on a podcast to be on your
fancy files. Do you want to be on my podcast? And they're like, oh no, we don't want to talk about bringing back the mammoth. I'm like, oh, sorry, free publicity, but that's fine. You don't want to be on it? Okay, cool, whatever.
Wait, pause. Is that why they weren't on your podcast?
What?
Those people who are bringing back the mammoth. I thought they were going to be on your podcast. Are we not allowed to talk about that?
No, I mean, they declined.
Oh, that's declined why,
for a. No, not because they don't want free publicity. I was going to say, they've been in
like every single like news.
No, they declined because they didn't think it was a good fit.
Good.
Which I do have to say, airing all this out in public, in this public forum, if you are going to call one of your key tenets of bringing back an animal from extinction, sorry, I'm saying that poorly, but.
They say it's going to fight climate change.
If you are going to claim that bringing back an animal is going to help reverse climate change, then you should be willing to go on
and defend
a climate change focused and energy transition and decarbonization focused podcast.
Right.
But you should be happy to go on it.
We spoke about this at length forever ago when this first came out, and you ripped them a new one.
Yeah, I said
so. They probably just found that podcast. But yeah, let's focus on the animals that are currently existing that are dying off, and not bringing back a mammoth.
We could do that, or we could bring back some saber-tooth. Bring back the saber-tooth tiger, the Tasmanian tiger, the woolly mammoth.
Okay, so speaking of which, that literally segues us into what I wanted to talk about.
Perfect. Let's talk about
the meatball that we weren't able to talk about.
I love meatballs.
Okay, so this is a different company. So this is not the one that's in, because the other company that's trying to bring back the saber-toothed tiger and mammoth, they're in Fort Worth, right?
They have an office somewhere around here.
But they're,
I thought we were talking about meatballs.
Yeah, like
favorite. My favorite meatball are the Swedish meatballs at IKEA.
That's so gross.
I don't know why, but I just really like them.
No, so this is a different company, is what I'm saying. This is an Australian
different company. Different kind of meatball?
An Australian cultured meat firm made a giant meatball with mammoth DNA and lab-made lamb. Which, one, for people who are asking, a meatball is made up of different types of meat, so it's not crazy that lamb is included in that. But when I read the original article... last week, once again, a heavy proportion or percentage of the mammoth DNA, like what it is, elephant. Like, so this is just elephant. So, like, is that something we really want to get people like, hey, look, try this mammoth meatball. Let's go murder some elephants. No, like, they're already on the verge of extinction.
Now, I do need to bring up when we. Was it Netflix that had that, like, The Future of Us series?
It was The Future of Meat is one of the episodes that we watched.
One of the episodes was The Future of Meat. And the whole idea, so it's all lab-grown meat. But one of the things they talked about towards the end was, like, this idea of growing meat of interesting and exotic animals.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to wake up one morning and decide, you know what? I want to have a wallaby burger. Or like, oh, I want to have a dodo bird burger, then you could.
Right. And I don't know if we talked about this, and that's not, this is a different article, by the way, so don't let me forget it.
Yep.
It's like a part two of the mammoth meatball. I don't remember if we talked about this before, but that's the problem. That's like why we're here to begin with, is because, like, that's not fixing the problem. If you're just, it's because we as modern people have everything at our fingertips. The fact that we can eat avocados is not normal. Like, it is, and the fact that we can have even oranges, like, all these things are like a papaya, like, all these, like, fruits and vegetables and meats that are not native to your local surroundings is a very modern phenomenon. Like, we should be eating seasonally. We should be canning and, like, preserving things. Like, that is what people for thousands and thousands of years, like, that's how they ate. And so for me, if you're just like, it's, I don't see that fixing, like, anything climate related or anything like food shortage related by giving us another option to not think sustainably and holistically about our food.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I think we should be doing all of that, eating seasonally and,
in fact, Joe,
and focusing on your local food stuff.
I think this is going to take some planning, but I think it would be really interesting if we next year, or maybe like half a year, we did a whole year of seasonal eating where we could only get things. I don't know how, like, that would just take a lot of research to know, like, where we could or how we could do that. But I think that would be a really fun experiment.
I think it would be too. All of you listeners out there who are local to the DFW area and want to join us,
yeah,
send us an email. Together. Leave us a review saying that you want to join us. Give us that 5-star rating.
Oh my God. Make sure you subscribe. Stop. No. Hit the bell.
All jokes aside, absolutely. And
or at least try it for a month to see if we could do it.
And I think that one very important part here, because I have gone down this rabbit hole on YouTube. Are they still called rabbit holes on YouTube? I thought they were called something else.
I call it the black hole.
Anyway. I've gone down the homesteading funnel far too many times, and I still bring it up because I think it's really a cool idea. One of the most important parts that may not be obvious when you watch like a show is that there is a small communal army behind each homestead channel and homestead life. So the idea of seasonal eating, that is something that, especially if we were talking about like doing canning and stuff, that is where you and I could try to grow a bunch of food, try to can it ourselves here, try to do all of that while dealing with Jake and ultimately say, okay, that was fun. We're never doing this again. Or that's when you have two or three other couples come over or two or three other families. You have this big, huge canning party and ultimately all of the kids are entertained. Everybody's canning. Everybody's having a great time. And then it's like, it's almost like a harvest festival.
It's a barn raising. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say this, this is where you and I differ because I am not talking about homesteading, Joe. I want to be able to prove that you can do it in a city, like in an urban environment where you don't have your own chickens.
Yeah,
you may
we'll
not
do it
have
all in the backyard.
Like maybe you're in an apartment or a high rise where you don't have like maybe you have like a little windowsill herb garden, but you may not have access to all this stuff. And so I feel like a lot of people who don't have like the sprawling homestead feel like they can't do that stuff and they can't eat seasonally and they can't eat sustainably. But you can. Like we have co-ops and farmers markets. And, you know, all that stuff, that it would be a fun experiment. I don't think we could do it for a year, but it would be, I'm sure we would be able to implement aspects of it. Because I was even looking, like, Bonton Farms, they'll sell you groceries. And they just never emailed me back. So I actually, I emailed them and I asked, like, hey, like, I had placed an order and everything. No one ever emailed me back. So if anyone knows anyone at Bonton Farms, hit me up. But anyway, I think it'd be fun. But yes, to your point.
We're going
to
do it.
If anyone's interested.
And I agree. I think it's not necessarily homesteading, but it is a level of pre-planning following the seasons.
Right.
Speaking of seasons.
Wait, I'm not done with the meatball.
We're getting back to meatballs because this is meatball season.
Okay. So no one tasted the meatball that was made out of mammoth.
Wait, so they threw it out?
It was just a statement to raise awareness of meat alternatives, the firm said. But the reason why no one ate it is because, where did they, blah, blah, blah. There's a very large concern about potential allergies to the 5,000-year-old protein. So humans may not even be able, like a modern human may not even be able to eat mammoth.
What is this? What is this trash? What is wrong with these people?
It says, but no one has tasted it because humans could be allergic to this protein.
That is
the meatball isn't pure mammoth. Blah blah blah. We knew that African elephant. Blah blah blah. We know that.
So here's my biggest gripe with them: one, they are doing publicity stunts.
Yes.
Two, there are people who have eaten mammoth because as they are thawing out of the ground.
We're finding
as I hear on Meat Eater, and this is on the Meat Eater podcast, they do talk about people who have tried mammoth because when you're out there in Siberia and a mammoth starts getting
They eat it instead of giving it to science?
Well, I mean, yeah, they give it to science, but, you know, they try a little bit.
What?
Yeah.
They decimate an archaeological find?
Yeah, whatever.
I'm not okay with that.
Hey, I'm just making the point that these people are clearly fake news. Like, what exactly are they trying to do? They're making a meatball that they won't even eat themselves, and they're doing it to try and raise awareness of something. But what's the awareness they're raising? Okay, I think it's just ridiculous.
It's stupid. Well, yes. But okay, I'm halfway down and I finally got to humans haven't eaten mammoth in thousands of years, so it could be too risky. Okay.
And what is this too risky?
It's unclear. Let me
finish
it.
Bring your EpiPen.
Okay. Normally, we would taste our products and play around with them, but we were hesitant to immediately try and taste because we're talking about a protein that hasn't existed for 5,000 years. Which, wait a minute, were there mammoths during the Egyptian times?
I don't remember when the last mammoth...
Because 5,000 years is not that long ago.
Yeah, I don't remember when the last mammoth was walking.
I've got no idea what the potential allergenicity might be of this particular protein, whoever told CNN. There's evidence that ancient humans consumed mammoth meat and that they also used clever preservation methods, including submerging the meat in cold water, due to the sheer quantity of meat that could be harvested from the animal. Research suggests the mammoths went extinct partially due to climate change. Wait. So, climate change killed the mammoths. Why would bringing them back to a climate change situation fix the climate?
These are the questions. These are the gears that spin in circles in my mind.
This is just wasted research funds.
Well, I think for most of these companies, I don't think they're spending.
It's like private.
Yeah, they're spending venture capital funding.
Stupid. Let's focus on like sustainable greenhouses.
Yeah, let's do regenerative agriculture and give everybody a greenhouse, so that way they can raise their own greens.
So Joe, as many of y'all know, Joe. You did your research in Alaska for your dissertation. So correct. I got to go up with you for your last research trip, and Chena Hot Springs is a resort in Fairbanks, Alaska, and that's where you did some of your data mining or whatever it's called. But at the time, we knew the owner of the resort,
yes,
Bernie. And what I loved about going up there is that like entire resort is essentially sustainable. Correct me if I'm wrong, right? Like it had a hot springs, and so they had the ability to use the energy from the hot springs to power.
Yeah,
the
so they did a whole lot on their own.
And they recycled and had a massive greenhouse.
Yeah, so they used the geothermal energy. They used the geothermal energy to run basically all the electricity, as well as generating heating for the greenhouses.
Right.
They mostly grew cash crops, so they didn't do like a sustainable permaculture, like seasonal harvest type thing. They were growing in the main greenhouse. They're growing cucumbers and tomatoes year round.
Right. Which is, I don't see that as a problem. And we ate them and they were delicious and they were massive.
Yeah. It's not a problem. I think it is just it's different than saying they're fully self-sufficient. Because in the winter time, you're not going to just live on cucumbers and tomatoes.
But they did lettuce too.
They did. But I think it was, they did a lot less.
Right. I meant more from like an energy perspective. Because he owned or owns like a massive recycling facility in Alaska.
K&K Recycling.
Yeah. And they like, what do they – they do something – like, they don't they turn it into, like, wood?
All of the paper products, they were in the process of turning into wood. Not wood, but they were basically trying to they were trying to do something so that they could burn it as biomass
right.
and generate electricity. I think before we left, they were still having some trouble. And this is why, to go on another rant, not a rant, but a public service announcement. This is why it is so important to properly categorize and properly do that thing.
Distribute
with
recycling.
With your recycling. I'm not remembering the right term. It's not categorize, but
you split them up. Organize.
Else. Yeah, organize. Sure, we'll stick with that. So this is why it's so important, because the paper products that he was getting, they were too contaminated, and so they couldn't actually burn them. And that was making it so that the biomass reactor wasn't working properly. All because people were not
cleaning.
Fully cleaning or making the right, putting in the right papers. They would be putting in like magazines that you can't put in.
Because it has like a waxy
all of this other stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So ultimately it made it, that was one of those issues, but that was
what? 8 years ago.
Yeah. That was 8 years ago. So
anyway,
lots of interesting
stuff. Mammoth meatballs are pure publicity stunt. But you heard it from Joe.
I would eat one.
Joe would eat one. I mean, what's the worst thing that could happen? You like go into, what is it, aphylactic shock?
Yeah. And guess what? That's what EpiPens are for.
Right. Like, so I'm like, I feel like that is, someone can taste test it. Just go to a hospital and taste test it. These guys are wimps.
And that's what I'm saying, that somebody has already taste tested mammoth. They have cut a slice out.
According to you.
And they're like, meh, it's okay. A little chewy. Maybe a little freezer burned.
Anyway. Who's our sponsor this week?
Well, this week, our MIT? Sponsor is... No, not MIT.
Harvard.
I don't know who our sponsor is this week.
This week, our sponsor is the Lord Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Okay. He came back
because
today.
It is Easter. This is the day we celebrate him rising from the grave and saving us from ourselves.
Boom.
So thank you, Jesus.
You want to know something? A fun Bible fact, which you probably already know, but
okay,
I still think
me.
It's Eastery.
Okay, tell me.
Like, so when the women go to the, and they find the tomb empty, they're like freaking out, right? And they're walking back, trying to figure out what's going on. And who do they run into?
Doubting Thomas.
No. Jesus. But who did they think Jesus was?
The gardener.
Right. The Garden of Eden.
Whoa.
Boom. That's cool. Called framing stories.
Cool.
Forever the gardener.
Forever.
And with that.
With that, he is risen.
And Petir. We're going to go.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he is
oh,
risen
sorry.
Indeed.
He is risen indeed.
All right. But here we're going to go.
Bye.
Bye-bye.